History through the eyes of those who lived it. This is Hometown Heroes, presented on the air and online by Provident Payments, proudly honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes, the program that reminds you no matter where you live in this great country of ours, no matter how big or how small your hometown might be, there really are stories there that should never go untold. And they don't have to go untold if we're willing to invest a little time and a little attention to ask some questions and then, of course, be patient enough to listen as long-buried memories start to rise up to the surface. We want to honor our veterans for their service and their sacrifice. We really want to preserve their stories so we never forget the price that's been paid for our freedom. And when we start out with those intentions, it really is amazing what happens, because not only are we educated, not only are we entertained, but we really are inspired by these stories from our greatest generation. All around America this week, of course, families gathered to celebrate Thanksgiving. And I don't know about you, but sometimes it's hard for me to slow down enough to take a full inventory of all the things that I really should view with gratitude. One thing that I'm really thankful for is the willingness of all of these amazing veterans who trust us enough to share their stories here, perhaps without realizing just how significant a gift they're giving to the rest of us. Some of the memories we've heard on Hometown Heroes involve experiencing Thanksgiving during World War II, when so many of our service members wondered if they'd ever get to sit down for a real holiday meal with their family again. And here in 2021, I know many families sat down this past week with an empty chair, their first Thanksgiving without a very special member of their family. One family at the forefront of my mind this past week was the Sanchez family in Southern California. Earlier this year, we introduced you to William Sanchez, who had spent most of World War II as a prisoner of war after being captured on Corregidor in May of 1942. This past Wednesday, November 24th, the day before Thanksgiving, Mr. Sanchez was laid to rest at Arlington National Cemetery, an honor fitting for a man whose 103 years on this planet were marked by courage, kindness, and dignity. Mr. Sanchez spent 39 months in the absence of freedom during the prime of his life, relying each one of those days on his faith and his will to survive. And here's what he told us about that moment when he finally tasted freedom again.
It was a great feeling just to be free. It was just something you experience once in a lifetime. Freedom. You realize what the word freedom really means.
The late William Sanchez laid to rest this week at Arlington National Cemetery. On our last episode, we met a 100-year-old Pearl Harbor survivor who had endured the sinking of his second ship nearly a year after those attacks on Oahu. I don't think we're quite going to experience deja vu this week, but it will definitely be a parallel story this coming week as we prepare to mark the 80th anniversary of the attack on Pearl Harbor. Our friends at the Best Defense Foundation will be taking 60 World War II veterans on a free week-long journey to Oahu to mark that occasion. Among those 60 are 9 veterans who we've gotten to meet here on Hometown Heroes. Follow the Best Defense Foundation's social media channels for updates on that special endeavor. I have the links for you at hometownheroesradio.com. And let's get familiar with one of those special veterans over the next hour. David Russell, or simply Russ, as his friends call him, turned 101 in September. He'll be going back to a place where his life nearly came to a tragic end at age 21 on December 7th, 1941. Before we hear Russ's Pearl Harbor story, though, let's hear about his childhood in Auburn, Nebraska.
It's a little town of 2,000 with a lot of lightning and thunder.
Gets a little windy out there?
Very windy. You flew kites in March because we had wind.
You probably hear the corn stalks rustling when it gets windy, huh?
You can hear that corn grow.
You can hear the corn grow?
Yes, it grows so fast that the humidity back there caused that corn to grow, I think. I don't know. But
how would I recognize the sound of corn growing? What does it sound like?
You can just hear it real, when you're out there. You can just, maybe it's the wind making it. But
yeah? Like Rice Krispies or something? A little snap, crackle, pop?
There you go.
And what was your childhood like there? Did you have brothers and sisters?
I had two brothers and a sister. Both of them were in the military during World War II. One was Navy and one was Coast Guard.
Why the Navy? What was it about the Navy that made you want to join?
My dad had a friend who was a Navy man. He was in the Army with my dad. And then after World War I, he joined the Navy and he'd come and visit my dad a lot. Mm-hmm. And I think probably the uniform at that time.
You liked the Navy uniform better than the Army?
Yes.
Thought the ladies would like it better?
That I don't know.
But you get this idea of joining the Navy, and you did so a long time before Pearl Harbor, more than 2 years before Pearl Harbor.
Yes.
What were those early days for you like in the Navy? What kinds of things did you do? Where did they send you?
After I got aboard ship, I was assigned to the 5th Division, which is the starboard side of the boat deck. Our duties then was to hoist boats in and out, and when we were underway, if they flew a seaplane, we were to retrieve it. And we had a sled with a cargo net on the back of it, and this pontoon had a hook on it. And when we'd make a real hard turn, the rough sea would turn really smooth, and then this aircraft would land in the water and slide up on that sled and fell back to hit that cargo net, and then we'd hoist it aboard. We got up at 5:30 in the morning. We'd scrub down the decks, wash the wash paint work, shine the bark work. Then we'd go down for breakfast, and then 8 o'clock, turn two again, then go back up and fight the rust. All ships have a lot of rust, you know, the salt
sure.
water.
And this is the ship you're talking about here is the battleship USS Oklahoma?
Battleship Oklahoma,
And your uncle was on that ship?
He came aboard after I was on there. We were in San Francisco at the time at Hunter's Point, and he came aboard. That was in September, I think.
September of 41?
41, yeah.
Well, that had to be pretty special to have your uncle aboard. Not everybody has that.
Well, when I went broke, I knew where to go get some money.
And I guess we're so used to modern times, and of course it was World War II that gave us that policy after the 5 Sullivan brothers went down, but people aren't used to family members serving on the same ship or in the same unit. There were 23 pairs of brothers that died on the USS Arizona on December 7th. I interviewed a man here years ago who lost one of his brothers on the Oklahoma but survived, and here you're on the Oklahoma with your uncle. And what about all the other guys? What was the camaraderie like aboard that ship?
We had all our seamen were from different parts of the world, you know. We had people with Germans. Mm. We had Russians.
Really?
Yeah. We had people from all different states. I think we had every state in the United States, all those guys. And the Southerners. We had quite a few Southerners.
So pretty eye-opening for a young man from Nebraska to interact with all these guys.
Everything was different.
How about where you were stationed there at Pearl Harbor? Did you get to enjoy that island paradise a little bit?
Oh, yeah. We had sunshine every day, and the weather was perfect. We would operate during the week and come in on the weekends. Just before the war, we were our exercise was to take gun crews from other ships out, and we'd do a lot of firing, AA firing.
So you'd have a lot of practice.
We had a lot of practice.
But did you have any idea that a war was coming?
I saw my uncle was in the Air Force in Honolulu the night before. That was Saturday night.
And to be clear, this is a different uncle. So you've got an uncle that's on the ship with it. You also have another uncle stationed at Hickam Field just a few miles away. So you ran into him, the Air Force uncle.
That was my dad's brother also. He told me that, he said, we'll be at war within 12 days. I was...
Really? So when he told you that, was that kind of a smack in the face? Was that a big eye-opener?
Well, they were talking about war because they were talking, they sent those dignitaries from Japan to Washington, D.C., and that was the big, you know.
Yeah.
That was the news in those days.
Right. They were there when Japan attacked you guys at Pearl. But did you believe him when he told you that? Did you think he knew what he was talking about?
The way the world was then, you know, after what Germany was doing, dominating everything they can get their hands on, is one of those things you think about, you know.
But when you went to sleep on Saturday night, December 6th, I'm sure you had no idea what you were going to wake up to the next day.
I thought we'd just go to work and do our work and have a holiday routine.
What really happened? What do you remember about that morning?
I was in the compartment just reading a book, and Lieutenant Rommel gets on the loudspeaker. He says, this is attack, fellas. And he didn't say this. He said an S word. And boy, that woke us up. About that time, those torpedoes start hitting us. And pow, 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 pow. The 9 of them hit us.
And where were you?
I was in the compartment. And those torpedoes just hit me, well, probably 80 feet from me and just across from me there.
So what did that feel like?
Oh, my goodness. You know, as clean as those ships were, dust. I don't know where the dust came from, but it probably come from the blowers, the air blowers. You started coughing, so much dust. It's unbelievable.
Well, it sure seems like there's nothing that could prepare you for this. And you're trying to figure out what in the world's going on, probably, right?
Yeah, what do I do next? When he said air attack, I had 2 battle stations. If we came under air attack, I was to sink cover. I had to go down below decks, below the armor decks. And if we go to surface action. My battle station was the 5-inch 51s. They were in casemates alongside the ship.
Uh-huh. So where'd you go?
So every day I went down below decks. And I went down. That hatch I went through is 13 and a half inches thick armor plate. From 13 and a half inches down to 8 inches, 3/4 inch length of the ship. And they started to close the hatch, and I said, well, you know, my mind started operating, and I said, I've been trained to be a first loader on an anti-aircraft gun. In case somebody gets hurt, I can replace them. And by the time I got out of that ship, it was halfway over. It began to capsize, you know, right away.
Yeah. You said the number, 9 torpedoes, and that ship
several
starts...
Several bombs, yeah.
And it's starting to turn over, ends up tipping over something like 150 degrees, right? I mean, almost mm-hmm. completely... And, upside down.
And trying to get out of those compartments, you know, people were dogging, you know, they dog everything down those hatches. There's 8 dogs on every hatch. It's not like these quick
right.
disconnect hatches that we have today. But I would try to undog them. Somebody else on the other side would dog them down. And then I had to climb over lockers. The concussion or the explosions caused those lockers to break loose. So I had to divert myself around to get out or climb over the lockers.
Could you see? Was it dark under there?
We had portholes when I got up on the main deck there, and they were still open.
Right, but you had to get up there first. So you're well, scrambling over fallen lockers. There's probably is there water
well,
rushing in too?
See, we had battle lanterns also.
Right.
When we locked last Texas, the battle lanterns went on.
Mm-hmm. I imagine there's just chaos all around you probably, right? You have other guys that are trying to figure out what they're trying to do or where they're going?
Yeah, it was pretty well organized. You know, we used to well train. We had no problems, you know, people up starboard and down port.
Have you ever stopped to think about what if I hadn't made that decision to go topside when I did?
Those men are still down there. Yeah, they got trapped, yeah.
And of all the ships at Pearl Harbor, only the Arizona lost more men than the Oklahoma.
429 we lost. Mm-hmm. A lot of my friends. Mm-hmm.
What was going through your mind while this is happening?
Oh, everything goes, why did Japan do this, you know? Why? Because it was warlords in Japan, they were different.
So when you did get to the surface or to the top of the ship, it's already starting to roll over?
The water just began to come over the main deck there. And the ship was, what, about 80 degrees?
Mm-hmm.
About ready to capsize there.
So if you're on the top, you're really on the side with the way the thing is turning.
Yeah, the deck is facing you, yeah.
Uh-huh.
The water hose coming across, I grabbed a water hose and just hand over hand myself up. Oh, then I went down over the side.
Because the ship's turning, you're basically climbing to get to what was the side, which is now the top, and then you slid off into the water?
No, the half-inch thick steel plates,
uh-huh.
They were riveted together, so I just went down and I got a hold of the edge of that, and I just gave one big leap, and I caught a line from the Maryland. We were tied alongside.
Uh-huh.
And I got a hold. See, there was fire coming down between the two ships.
Right.
From the Arizona, and I didn't want to get that water because I'm afraid that, you know, the way the wind was blowing that fire down, I thought, oh my, you know, I could see those guys walking in that fire and swimming in it, trying to push that oil away from them, but they just couldn't do it. But anyway, I called up on the Maryland, and they were at general quarters. They're firing their 1.1 guns, anti-aircraft guns, so I just over there, and I wanted a few instructions on how to handle that ammunition, and I got it, and so I helped them pass ammunition.
I'm just thinking about this. So you were, what, 21 years old? Yeah, 21 years old.
I just turned 21. Uh-huh.
Uh-huh. And your ship has been almost sunk by now. It's about to go under.
Just the bottom of it sticking out. Uh-huh.
And you've escaped that. You've got, you know, the water's on fire, basically, because all the oil from these other ships.
The fire was on the inboard side by the beach.
Uh-huh.
Between the two ships.
And there's all this, you know, everything else is going around here, too. I mean, the Arizona has had the big explosion. I'm sure there's smoke everywhere.
Oh, awful, yeah.
What are you hearing? What are you smelling?
The smoke. You could smell the smoke. Uh-huh. Since I was down in the compartment, I didn't see the Arizona explode.
Right.
But I did see the destroyer Shaw when it went up in smoke.
Which was a more spectacular explosion.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The photos of that are probably some of the most striking photos out there. It looks like fireworks going on.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. Mm-hmm. So I want to tell you another story.
Yeah.
At 7 o'clock in the morning, a high-test gasoline tanker for the fuel for the aircraft tied up just ahead of us. Nobody attacked that ship.
What would have happened if they did?
Oh, probably, I don't know. That high-test gas, you know how explosive that is.
Yeah, that's almost miraculous that it...
Oh, you're right.
I'm just trying to imagine being in your shoes, and I mean, you tell me that you go over to the Maryland and you jump into action and help them load ammunition for this big gun, but did you have any concept of what was really happening there or what had happened to the world?
Well, we knew we would go to war as soon as we'd sit around and just waiting for our orders to come in where to go. We'd sit around talking about, what are they going to name this? Are they going to name this Pearl Harbor? So it turned out to be Pearl Harbor, yeah.
How long did that last with you helping them with that gun on the Maryland?
Not too long. Then from there, the Maryland wanted the Oklahoma sailors to leave, so I went over on the beach. And from the beach, I went up to the administration building. And that's when I got to see all the burnt. They were in the administration building. They just laid them in there.
Dead bodies.
Some were dead and some were dying. But most of them wanted to smoke, and I didn't smoke. So there was a Gee-Dunk stand there in the center. We call it Gee-Dunk stand, the place where they sell ice cream and cigarettes and stuff like that. And I went over and got a pack of cigarettes and some matches, and I lit their cigarettes for them.
That was your way of helping to console people who...
I didn't have any money, so I felt guilty doing what I did, but it was for a cause.
How hard was that to see? I mean, this is the human cost of war right in front of you.
When you see that flesh, it's awful. Yeah, it's... Not fun. You feel like you wish it was you instead of them. Yeah.
Understandably so. It is time for our first break, but we'll hear more of Russ Russell's story when we return. The 101-year-old is one of 60 World War II vets scheduled to fly to Pearl Harbor with the Best Defense Foundation to mark the 80th anniversary of that day of infamy. But December 7th is significant in Russ's life for more than just what happened on that date in 1941. Much more in store when Hometown Heroes comes right back after this. I always love hearing from listeners, and so many of you tell me you listen to Hometown Heroes while you're on the road. Nobody spends more time on the road than our friends in the trucking business. And if that's your business, I'm sure you know about Central Valley Trailer Repair. If you don't, you really should. Conveniently located near California's major transportation arteries, CVTR has stockpiles of parts waiting for you in Fresno and in Stockton, with experienced service technicians ready to handle even the most difficult of repairs. Central Valley Trailer Repair is an authorized Great Dane sales, parts, and service center, and you can always find a huge inventory of new and used semi-trailers for sale too. Dry freight, refrigerated, flatbed, whatever you're looking for, CVTR has you covered. How about 24-hour emergency service? You bet. What can't CVTR help you with? That's a question I can't answer, so you'll have to ask them yourself at 1-800-877-8444. That's 1-800-877-8444. The website? That's simple. CVTR.com for Central Valley Trailer Repair. And tell them you heard about them on Hometown Heroes.
Proudly presented by Provident Payments, this is Hometown Heroes, celebrating everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes, getting you ready for the 80th anniversary of the attack on Pearl Harbor with the story of one of the World War II veterans who will be heading back there in this next week. Russ Russell turned 101 in September. He'll travel from his Oregon home to Oahu with the Best Defense Foundation to the spot where his ship, the USS Oklahoma, lost 429 men on December 7th, 1941. He now has 80 years of perspective with which to view those historic events. But back then, the prevailing emotion he experienced was anger.
Yes, and back then, everything is kill a Jap, remember? Everything advertising was kill a Jap. Now, it's altogether different. They're the greatest people on earth, as far as I'm concerned. Mm-hmm. I really enjoyed the Japanese people.
But at the time, it's, wow.
Well, at the time, you know. But look what happened in Germany. The little community I was from, mostly Germans.
Oh, sure, in Nebraska.
My great-grandfather was German, so.
So you see all these who've been killed, who've been wounded, and then you look out and you see your ship and it's upside down.
Yeah, no home. No place to eat. No clothing, no showers.
Everything you had is on that ship. So what'd you do?
After I left Fort Island, I went over to the receiving station and checked in because I knew they'd reassign us someplace. So we'd look at the, every day they'd post on the bulletin board the names of people where they'd be assigned. So about the third or fourth day, the ship that I went aboard, it was still at sea at the time. So I think on December, I can't remember the dates, but it was quite a while after that the ship came in. And I still didn't have anything to wear. And I had sort of looking for handouts to eat at the receiving station there.
Wow. And you had mentioned you had an uncle on this ship. When did you find out what happened to him?
Well, my uncle from Hickam Field, he and I were visiting there on the receiving station, and pretty soon I saw my uncle walking up from the submarine base, and he had whites on. And as soon as I saw him in whites, I knew what had happened. Because, see, they were just covered with oil when they took them out.
Mm-hmm.
And in those days, the uniform was shorts. And when you have whites on, you know, back when the war started, you knew what happened.
Well, and then he told you what happened to him.
And that's...
Could you believe what he went through? Can you can you share that story with us?
I don't know. If you have claustrophobia, you wouldn't want to hear it. Yeah, the upside down and no lights. Can you imagine? And you're just waiting for that water to build up and the oxygen disappearing.
And this could have happened to you not gone up when you went up.
Could have, yes.
So he's trapped in a ship that's turned over and compartments are filling up with water. He's running out of oxygen. How long was he down there?
30 hours.
30 hours. And then they cut him out.
And no lights.
No lights. And plenty of guys around him who are hurt, who are wounded, who are dead.
Yep. Floating around, yep.
What did that do to hear him tell that story to you?
My uncle, it was pretty hard on him. When we got into surface action, he sort of went, he was shell-shocked.
How could you not be going through that?
Yeah. And so they had to discharge him, yeah.
And I don't know if you can give us this perspective or not, but you've been an Oklahoma survivor for 75 years, and you've talked to a lot of other guys who are on your ship. You've got books about it. You know the story as well as anybody. How amazing, how remarkable, how unlikely is it that your uncle and almost another three dozen guys did survive for that long in a capsized ship?
It's hard to believe. And the way they survived was they tapped on the bulkhead to see if there was any water in there or not to find out what compartment they wanted to go into before. But as soon as they opened the hatch to go into another compartment, it started filling up too. But that's how they survived from compartment to compartment, yeah.
Can you give us a sense of what you saw? You told us about what you saw at the administration building there when they're bringing the dead and the wounded. But if you looked out at Pearl Harbor, that panoramic view, when this is all over, what did you see there?
You still see what happened those days back then. I can still picture the Oklahoma capsized there and the fire from the Arizona and the ship settled down, you know, and they just settled down in the 40, 45 feet of water, yeah. You know. But I still see it today, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Was that devastating? What did it feel like?
Oh, my goodness, yes. You wanted to do something, which we did. I'm pretty proud of that ship I was on, that little destroyer. They're little greyhounds, but they sure get around. a lot of high speed.
Well, and we're going to hear that ship's story too. Were you asked to get involved at all in the cleanup efforts?
No. We had no way of, no clothing to wear. We had nothing.
Well, maybe that's a good thing that you didn't have to take part in that.
That could be, because who wants to clean up that plasma, you know?
And you made the statement earlier that the 429 who died on the Oklahoma, a lot of those guys were your friends.
Yeah, I went through training with some of them, yeah.
Is that something you knew immediately, or was that something that over the days that followed, you'd find out one at a time?
Just one at a time. Just seeing some of the old shipmates, you know, from other ships, or especially destroyers tied up together, you know, and I get to see some of the old shipmates.
So how did you deal with that? I mean, emotionally, to get this news over and over again, that guy's gone, that guy's gone, that guy's gone.
Yeah, I know. It's devastating, but you adjust. It's just everything's adjustment, you know.
We've seen the images from Pearl Harbor. We've seen the poster that was all over America afterwards with the tattered flag and the smoke going past and Remember Pearl Harbor. We've heard the song, yeah. Sammy Kay Orchestra, Remember Pearl Harbor. Can you help us understand, though, how palpable that feeling was in that immediate aftermath of just how motivated you and all those other servicemen were to do something about it?
Oh, my goodness. That's quite a question to ask.
I mean, do I have that right? Is that what it felt like?
Yeah, it's about it, yeah. Mm-hmm. Devastating, like you said. And I can imagine what my folks were thinking.
Because they didn't know what happened to you.
They didn't know what happened to me. Before I got a letter home, I can't remember when it was, but it's been a while. Mm-hmm.
So they're back there in Nebraska, and they hear on the radio probably Pearl Harbor's been bombed, and they know that's where you are.
Yeah, everybody, my mom said everybody, everything was silent back there. Nobody moved. Everybody stayed close to the radio.
And then they may have even gotten the news that the Oklahoma had sunk and still didn't know what happened to you, probably.
They still didn't know, yeah. Right? And then, well, you know darn well, they knew that a lot of people died on those ships. Every ship lost men.
So then they didn't know that you were alive until they got a letter from you.
Until they got
my
letter. Uh-huh.
And how long was that?
It'd have to be when I got on a destroyer, because I never had anything.
So we're talking maybe even a month after it happened? They didn't know?
Probably right close to it, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, wow. So you get put on a destroyer, which is very different from a battleship.
Oh, the regulations are altogether different. On a battleship, you had to stay in your own division, mm-hmm. your cleaning area, during working hours. You didn't go visit anybody, just a community, and you worked just like you do on the outside. And then when you wanted to go someplace, you had to get permission to leave the area. You couldn't go down in your compartment. You had to stay in your working area for your 8 hours. Then when I went on a destroyer, everything's more relaxed. We didn't have to wear white shorts. We had dungarees to wear.
Uh-huh. And I'm just thinking here. I mean, maybe I should know better, because your birth certificate says you're 96, but you don't look 96.
Well, thank you.
And I'm thinking, it's hard enough for a guy to survive one of his ships sinking, let alone two, let alone the second one sinks on the third anniversary of the first one. I mean, this is kind of a hard-to-believe story you got here, Russ. But
yeah, I think a lot of people, I don't think people believe me sometimes when I tell them that. Well, I didn't know it was December the 7th that day when we were sunk. And see what was happening, we had to abandon ship because of the explosions. People were in the water floating around. The kamikazes knocked out our boat. We had two boats that knocked out those boats. Some of the rafts were broken. People were just floating around in their life jackets. And so we went up topside, and we threw everything over it would float. And we had some stages. Those stages we used to paint the side of the ship. Mm-hmm. So we saved one stage, and we had one wounded man. So we put this wounded man, after we got in the water, we put him on the stage, and he just paddled away. But anyway, there's still three of us left. And I don't know where the other survivors, the current or the tide, just carrying them out. And so here we are, three of us together, and we were going around this Japanese held island. We were headed out to sea, and I said, oh, my goodness. I thought, sure, the Japs would come and pick us up. They didn't. I think the current was so strong, probably they didn't have a boat to fight it. But anyway, pretty soon, there was nothing, no islands out there, nothing but the one we just left. And pretty soon, I saw a ship coming over the ride, and I was hoping it was American. It was. It was an American destroyer picked us up.
I want to ask you more about that, but it occurs to me that in those 3 years from December 7th, 1941 to December 7th, 1944, if you're on a destroyer in the Pacific, you saw a whole lot of other things that might stick with you. What were some of the other engagements that you guys were involved in?
We ran into two Japanese ships in 42. We opened fire on them. Of course, they overfired on us, too, but the first one we hit, I can't remember how many salvos we fired, but anyway, we missed. Just we went over it. Mm-hmm. So they fired another 5-gun salvo, and we hit the ship, and it exploded like an atomic bomb. When we went over it, it was just nothing. No survivors whatsoever. So there's another one out there. It was a submarine tender. And, you know, tenders are their supply ships and then the machine shops and all
right.
that. And so we opened fire on it, and our projectiles they explode, just throws this shrapnel all over the place. We're trying to silence their guns. After we silenced their guns, for some reason, they got them back in operation again. Hard to believe what those little Japanese can do, but they kept us going. However, we had to change over to armor-piercing shells to penetrate that steel.
Uh-huh.
Because those projectiles would hit that ship and just explode.
And were you on a gun crew on the Mahan,
yes.
too?
Uh-huh. 5-inch .38, first loader.
Uh-huh. That gets tiring after a while, doesn't it? Picking up those big old shells over and over again?
54 pounds.
That's all?
Mm-hmm. But you got to make sure that you can't let them wobble around in there because they'd go right up in the air, you know, when they ram it.
Yeah.
But anyway, I had to tell you about, we had a few seconds to just relax for a few seconds, you know, just intermittent. Well, you just, I thought, well, I better look around. You know, if you got any time, you look for aircraft. I'm always afraid of aircraft.
Uh-huh.
And I was looking back aft because most of the aircraft always came up behind the stern of the ship.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw something go across my face. And I thought, is that a projectile? And I looked in the water, sure enough. I saw that splash. And then I saw some more splashes. And then that upset me.
How close did they come to you?
You know, they just went over our heads, yeah.
Didn't hit the ship.
Yeah.
But it got your attention.
Got it? Oh, yes. You can't believe it.
Did you get used to it? Did you get used to being fired at, to have enemy planes or enemy shells or torpedoes heading your way?
Well, we didn't want to go through it again, but you have to be brave. You can't just let yourself down and hide. You got to just stand out there and get with it. That's what we did. Everybody, it's remarkable what these sailors can do when they have to. Oh, I'll tell you about another battle. This is a good battle we were in. This moonlight night, four of us destroyers operating off of New Britain.
Mm-hmm.
And we came under, I think they said 63 planes that were attacking us. So we laid a smoke screen. I don't know if I can tell you this story, if it'll go through or not. But we laid a smoke screen, and we were attacked by the Japanese aircraft all night long. And then we finally got fighter protection in the morning, and that's when it ceased. But anyway, we were completely black. And we had quite a few black men aboard ship. And they said, now you're one of us. we had more fun. Those guys had fun with us.
Because of all the smoke screen.
The smoke, yeah.
You guys were just covered in it.
We were covered black, yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that was pretty good. That was a fun day there, I guess.
And for people, you know, some of our younger listeners especially, they might not realize that the military was still segregated at that point.
Yes,
wasn't integrated
right, yeah.
until after World War II.
But aboard our ship, they were just like us. They loaded those guns. They passed ammunition.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Maybe this is a dumb question, but were you scared? Did you ever think, hey, I might not make it through this? I might not make it home to my family?
Many times.
Yeah?
Many times. It's just snap of a finger, you'd be gone. Or,
I mean, I've heard a lot of different answers. Some guys say, no, I was never afraid. I just knew I was going to get there. Another guy said, I can't believe I did.
I was always afraid.
Yeah?
We didn't want to die. Who wants to die? You know, when you think about it.
And you had seen enough that did.
Yeah, right.
Your destroyer was sunk December 7th, 1944, and it was just peppered with kamikazes. And this was before a lot of people even knew what a kamikaze was. I mean, it wasn't until a few months later that they really came in swarms in places like Okinawa and other spots there in the Pacific. Had you ever seen a kamikaze attack before that day?
In 1942, we were in this battle of, we lost a carrier that day and a destroyer, and I saw a plane hit a destroyer. I just thought somebody shot it down and hit the destroyer. But I look back now, was it a kamikaze attack then? Makes me wonder.
Maybe. But this wasn't something you guys were really prepared to consider, that they would crash intentionally into your ship.
Well, one time we had this Baka bomber came in. It's just an open pit plane with a big bomb in front of it. And you could hear it flying around out there just above the water trying to hit a ship. And that's when your hair stands up on end. I don't know why. You know, we're so used to planes flying, you know, enemy aircraft coming in. But it's scary. In Japan, Baka means crazy.
Well, and crazy is also one way to describe the coincidence of this sailor surviving two sinkings on the same calendar date 3 years apart. We'll hear about his experiences on the destroyer USS Mahan on December 7th, 1944, when Hometown Heroes comes right back after this. Do you ever have those moments where you realize you've been settling for less than the best for far too long? Sometimes we just accept the status quo without looking around for better ways to do things. And I've got to tell you, when it comes to your money I believe I found a better way with EECU. Take a look at myeecu.org and you'll see why. EECU is not a bank. It's a nonprofit credit union that's all about taking care of you, the member. That's one of the reasons EECU just keeps growing and growing. Close to 300,000 members now in 10 different California counties. Over 30,000 ATMs, free mobile banking. And what I really love is how EECU always goes above and beyond to serve the community. In 2013, the leadership and generosity of EECU helped establish Central Valley Honor Flight. More than 1,000 veterans now have gotten to see their memorials in Washington, D.C. for free. And that's just one example of the community involvement EECU takes oh so seriously. Pick up the phone and become a member today. 1-800-538-3328. That's 800-538-3328. Let's try a little experiment here. I'm going to say a common three-word phrase, and I want you to pay attention to what kind of reaction it produces for you. You ready? Here we go. Buying a car. Okay, be honest, did you tense up a little? If so, I don't blame you. Buying a car can be really stressful, and I've got three more words for you to make sure you do get it right. You ready? Farney Automotive Group. We recently went looking for our daughter's first car, and I made a beeline for Selma because I knew my friends at Farney Ford, Farney Buick GMC, and Toyota of Selma were people I could trust. Trust is a very important word when it comes to buying a car. And here's my advice. Regardless of what kind of vehicle you're looking for, start your search at Toyota of Selma because you can check out their wall of honor with group photos from every single Central Valley Honor Flight. Over 1,300 veterans who have their pictures on the wall there and also got a free oversized group photo from their trip to D.C. thanks to the generosity of the Farney Automotive Group. So new or used, big or small, start your car search today at Toyota of Selma. Selma, you can't miss it on the west side of the 99 at the Floral Avenue exit. And don't leave without visiting that wall of honor.
Honoring veterans from sea to shining sea, you're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler. Brought to you by this local station and its sponsors. And presented everywhere, on the air and online, by Provident Payments, one of the fastest-growing payment consultants in America. Connect today at providentpayments.com.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes. Hope that leftover turkey is tasty and you're carrying on that attitude of gratitude that Thanksgiving brings us back to each year. 101-year-old Russ Russell is thankful for the opportunity to travel back to Pearl Harbor next week for the 80th anniversary, thanks to the Best Defense Foundation. But December 7th, 2021 will not only be the 80th anniversary of his surviving the attack on the USS Oklahoma at Pearl Harbor, but also the 77th anniversary of the sinking of his destroyer, the USS Mahan, on December 7th, 1944.
We were making a landing on Ormoc, and of course we did our shelling, and then they sent us 26 miles north between Cebu and Leyte in case the Japanese ships came through. We could pick them up first, and that's when those 10 bombers came in just above the horizon.
Were you up topside?
Yeah, I was topside there. And then I had number three gun then. I was gun captain, number three gun. And I could see them coming in. One of them hit forward in the ammunition handling room. And then one came at us, and it exploded right in front of us. It just threw debris all over us. Pretty soon, here come another one in, and trying to wipe us out. And I could see that pilot trying to get that plane down. I saw him. He was going down, and I just glanced, and I saw him churning up the water. I don't know if he went down or what happened to him.
This is very unusual. A destroyer is not usually going to be targeted by a whole bunch of kamikazes. Usually they're going for a bigger target, right?
Like aircraft carriers.
Yeah. So what do you think made you guys so special? You were just in the wrong place at the wrong time?
That's it.
And maybe you don't have time to think about it while you're on a gun crew and stuff's exploding around
you're
you.
You're so busy. You're so busy. Thank God we were so well trained. You may not like that training we went through, but boy, oh boy, it pays off.
Saved your life?
Yep. Yeah, you're right. Mm-hmm. After those kamikazes hit us, the old man announced abandoned ship. We had the abandoned ship because so much, you know, everything was exploding, and that gasoline from those planes were burning. And one of them hit right there where the torpedo tubes are and knocked our stacks, knocked our masts and our our stacks over, and we had two stacks at that time. And the torpedo tubes were right there, and that fire was right there. And that's probably the old man said, we better get out of here before they explode. Thank God those torpedo tubes did not explode.
You wouldn't be here.
None of us would be here, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah. So you get into the water. You told us before you got one of the wounded guys onto that stage, which turned into a raft for him, basically, kept him afloat. And there were three of you total that were together in the water?
Yeah, three plus the wounded man.
How long were you in the water?
People ask me that. It seemed like we were in there an awful long time. I don't know. I can't tell you how long I was in that water. But I said something about 4 hours. Some guys, no, I don't think so, but, you know.
Did you have a Mae West or a tube around your waist? Or what?
Just a life jacket.
You saw land, but that's Japanese held, so you don't want to go there, right?
No way. I thought the Japanese were going to pick us up, what I thought.
Yeah. It just strikes me that that's got to be a really helpless feeling.
Well, when you're at sea like that, it is a helpless feeling. Are we going to survive? That's, you know, when you're talking about death, that is something different than aboard ship where you're fighting these guys. I don't know what it is, but...
So the four of you are floating for hours, and you don't know who's going to pick you up or if anybody's going to pick you up.
Right. Thank God I didn't see any sharks. In that warm water, you know, there are a lot of sharks.
And were you guys talking to each other this whole time?
Oh, yes. We stayed together.
What'd you talk about?
When we got off the ship, George Mower, he was living in Bothell, Washington. He says, you know what day this is? And I says, no. He says, this is December the 7th. I says, oh, no.
You and that date had a little history.
Yeah.
Man.
Yeah, that was wow. When this story picked us up, we were worn out, and I think it's, you know, the stress. But anyway, that ship got under attack all the time we were on that thing.
Yeah, so that's not exactly everything's over and great now, and you're safe.
Oh, yeah.
When you were in the water, did you have a conscious thought of what's going to happen here, and am I going to get out of this? What are my parents going to think?
Everything goes through your mind, everything, yeah. You wonder about your folks, and you wonder about the other guys. And
so that must have been a pretty welcome sight when you saw that destroyer and you realized it was an American destroyer.
Very, yes. And they took a chance, too, you know.
Yeah, because they're making themselves vulnerable to stop and pick you up.
That's right.
How exhausted were you? Did they have to pull you aboard? Were you able to climb up on your own?
They had their cargo nets over the side. They helped us aboard, yes. We couldn't do anything but just watch.
Your bodies were so exhausted from all that.
You just want to rest, yeah.
I'm trying to figure a few things out here, Russ, and I'm thinking, okay, you survive Pearl Harbor when your ship doesn't, and 429 guys go down with your ship. You go through these seven other invasions that you're supporting as a destroyer. Mm-hmm. Then that destroyer sinks. You survive floating in the water for hours and get picked up. And then you get to come home for a little survivor's leave. Did you really want to go back? What were you thinking? Why would you want, if this has almost killed you all these times, and you've dealt with so many other guys getting killed, why would you want to stay in the Navy after the war was over?
Well, people I talked to said, stay in. There's no jobs. You know, all the jobs had been taken. And so I thought, well, I'll just extend my enlistment for 2 years. Well, I had so much time in. I said, where else can I retire in 12 years, you know, or 14 or whatever it was, you know.
So you stayed in for 20 years.
So I stayed 20. I get paid for 21.
Have you been back to Pearl Harbor?
Yes, several times.
What do you do when you go there?
Oh, you just look, that's about all. I did go aboard the Arizona, and I got to talk to a few people, which, you know, sort of, they want to know what happened.
And you look out, and you can see the outline of some of that ship, and you can see those little drops of oil coming to the surface.
Yep, see it?
What do you think about when you look at that?
I still think about all the wasted lives. Even on both sides, you know, the Japanese and the Americans both. And why?
You look up at that white wall with all the names on it, and you recognize a lot of those names.
A few, just because some of those guys I went through training with.
Have you ever wondered about what they would have done with their lives?
Well, they would have had a family, probably, yeah. They'd been a grandpa by now, a great-grandpa.
It's the anniversary of Pearl Harbor. There aren't too many of you guys left that were there. What should the rest of us who weren't there? What do we need to know? What do we need to remember?
Keep America strong. Watching these demonstrations on TV sort of bothers me. They want to take our way of life away from us, as far as I'm concerned. It hurts, you know. We fought a war to protect us and be free.
And another spot that I'm sure was powerful for you, the National World War II Memorial. You took a trip here a couple of years ago with...
Oh, that was a beautiful trip.
You went South Willamette Valley Honor Flight.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. That's a long trip.
It's a long trip, but we all sit around reminiscing about what we did.
What did they say when you told them your story?
They just,
You ever get that reaction? Is this guy for real? Did this all really happen?
Sometimes I think they don't believe me. That's the way I feel.
Well, it is pretty hard to believe, isn't it?
Well, yeah, just like you say, it is hard to believe, yeah.
What'd you think of the World War II Memorial?
Oh, it was great. I love those states where they arrange that. Uh-huh.
You also saw part of that memorial, which is dedicated specifically to Pearl Harbor?
Yes, mm-hmm, yeah.
You saw a portion of the president's speech?
Yes, and then all those stars up there repping, 100,000?
406,000 Americans who died in the war. That's what those stars represent.
Yeah, that was it, yeah.
What did you think about when you looked at those stars?
It's just like when we were out at the Arlington. Mm-hmm. Why, all of them. Mm. Most of them were killed during wartime, yeah.
Yeah, and somehow you weren't. I mean, you could have been one of those tombs or one of those stars.
I could have, right? And look, I'm still alive. And why? There's something out there doing something to us. I don't know what it is. There's something out there protecting us. You know, we had a lot of problems with our guns sometimes. They wouldn't work or something wouldn't work aboard ship. And every time we went into action, that ship was perfect. Everything worked perfect. Hmm. Now, why? Can you explain that one?
I think there's a lot of unexplainable when it comes to your story.
Yeah, everything's unexplainable when it comes. Yeah, right.
And I know we're bouncing around, but back to your honor flight experience. So you got to see all that back in D.C., the World War II Memorial, yeah. Other monuments.
The one I really loved was that Korean. You know, when you go into battle, there's something about the guy's eyes, the fright, I think it is. Am I going to be shot or wounded or what? Yeah, I've seen that quite a few during World War II.
Uh-huh. You've seen that look in people's eyes?
That special look in their eyes, yeah.
Do you have that look in your eyes?
Probably. I think we all go through something like that. It's probably from fright. Like you say, are we going to survive this?
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, after all, we're just survivors. That's all we are.
With a story to tell.
We got into Baltimore. Goodness, all the people. Congratulations. And a lot of military were there.
Uh-huh.
And then when we came back to Portland, wow, what a celebration that was. I've never had that happen to me before. I'm just a old GI, you know. All I did was just bow to them like the Japanese bowed to us, you know, after World War II.
Did that make you feel that maybe somebody understands what you guys did and still cares about it?
That's sort of hard to believe people really know what we went through. I don't think anybody knows what we went through. They have to experience it themselves.
Well, I guess the next best thing is listening to you tell them about it, tell them your story and some of the things that you went through.
Hopefully it sinks in. Mm-hmm.
I think so. But I don't think you should use the word sink. You and that word don't have a good history.
Anyway, I think hopefully they believe me.
Well, I think everybody listening today believes you, and I want to echo what all those people at the Portland Airport were trying to say to you when you got home from your honor flight. Thank you for serving our country.
That was it. That big thank you. Yeah, that's a good way of putting it. That was a big thank you.
That is David Russ Russell, now 101 years old and headed back to Pearl Harbor with the Best Defense Foundation. Again, follow the foundation on social media for updates as those 60 World War II veterans, 9 of whom you've met on Hometown Heroes, are there in person as the world marks 80 years since that day of infamy. I have links for you at hometownheroesradio.com. And thanks so much for listening today. There's one more thing I gave thanks for this Thanksgiving. All of you, those of you who listen each week, all of you who send me ideas of the veterans in your life you think I ought to interview, and especially for all of those veterans like Mr. Russell who are willing to let us gain so much understanding by sharing what they went through so many years ago. I'm Paul Leffler, reminding you once more that freedom is not free.
To let Paul know about a veteran in your life, visit hometownheroesradio.com and click on Suggest a Veteran. Today's program has been brought to you by Provident Payments. Give your business the edge only their personalized service can deliver at providentpayments.com.